Welcome to Nurse Educator Podcast. I'm Marilyn Orman, Editor-in-Chief of Nurse Educator. With me today is Dr. Meg Moorman. Meg is the Director of Faculty Innovating for Nursing Education, the Fine Center at Indiana University School of Nursing. She's also the coordinator of the MSN in Nursing Education program. But I bet that you're familiar with Dr. Moorman through her many articles on visual thinking strategies. Meg, thank you so much for joining us for this podcast and sharing your expertise.
I'm so glad to be here.
And we're delighted to have you. I would like you to start out with telling us what visual thinking strategies are, and then how did you develop your interest in this?
Okay, that's a great question. Well, visual thinking strategies is a teaching method, and it uses art to engage participants in conversations. And they use visual evidence to support what they're seeing. So the first time I heard about this was through one of my patients and then through a talk, someone who was talking about using art to teach medical students. And I spoke to the speaker after the presentation, and he gave me some information about visual thinking strategies. And then one of my patients told me, oh, they do that at the Indianapolis Museum of Art. So I contacted someone there, and I invited 10 students to go with me to the art museum. And they have a facilitator trained in visual thinking strategies. And we looked at three works of art, and we had conversations based on those. And I knew when I saw how students engaged with the facilitator, something was going on. I didn't know what. And I started doing it regularly, and I had so many students sign up that we didn't have enough spots for students. They loved it. So I actually made that my dissertation topic. But visual thinking strategies came about by an art educator, Philip Yenawan, who wanted to engage art museum attendees with works of art. So the average work of art, when someone goes to an art museum, what would you guess, Marilyn? How much time would you guess someone spends looking at a work of art before they move on to the next piece?
I'm not even sure. Would it be 5 minutes?
No, it's 30 seconds. So that's about how long I know. Isn't that shocking? But he really wanted to engage people with the artwork for longer. So he worked with a developmental psychologist, Abigail Hausen, and they came up with three questions to ask, and they trained facilitators to do this with people in art museums. So they look at a work of art, and the first thing they say is, what's going on in this picture? And if I had 10 participants in the circle, one person might say, well, I think this is a little boy sitting in the corner. Someone else might say, well, I think it's an adult, or I think it's an angel. But then the facilitator asks, what are you seeing that makes you say that? And the viewer then has to give visual evidence for what they're seeing. Well, I think it's a little boy because he's small in stature. His head is larger than the rest of his body proportionately, so I think it's a child. I think it's a boy because he has a blue shirt on. And then the facilitator will follow up. So that person is actually giving visual evidence for what they're seeing to kind of help them support their rationale for what they believe that is. But the next participant might give completely different visual evidence. So you can actually hold multiple possibilities about a work of art at the same time without giving anyone credit for you're right and you're wrong, because art is really open to interpretation. And then the third question that the facilitator asks is, what more can you find? And that causes the group to go back and look at the work of art again and look more closely. And then they start scaffolding off of each other. And they might say, oh, I agree. I think it's an angel. You're right. The reason I think that is I didn't see the wings that you pointed out. Or I agree that it's a little boy. But they scaffold off of each other. And this is actually based in educational theory. The Vygotsky theory that social learning is the best way to learn. And then the participants are thinking out loud. And that's really important as an educator. It's important that other people hear how another person is thinking and processing information. So that's kind of what it is. That's how I got interested in it. And then, like I said, I did it with my dissertation, and I've continued to do work with it in a multitude of ways, but it really is a fascinating way to learn. And every time you look at a work of art, you'll hear students find something different. So it's a lot of fun.
Can you share a couple of ways that you've used it in your own courses, some specific examples?
Sure. So when I first started taking students, I was teaching an obstetrics course. I contacted the Indianapolis Museum of Art, and the facilitator actually picks out the works of art. And we have, usually with one work of art, we can have a 20-minute conversation with hardly any lull in the conversation. And people are very eager to participate. One of the works of art that she picked was in the African Gallery of Art, and it was by an artist named Twin 77. And it was a wooden painting. It was done on wood, and it had a lot of people in it. It looked like they were in a village. And so students looked at this work of art, and it's called Healing of the Abiku Children. And they thought that I had picked it, and that they thought it was all about motherhood. But I didn't choose it. Now, it does have some history about it. So we talk about it. There's a lot of different things going on in the painting, and it's open to all kinds of interpretation. But interestingly enough, one of my students one year, I thought Abuku was the name of the village. Twin 77 is the artist, and he's from Nigeria. And one of my students was from Nigeria, and she said, no, Abuku means a child who's destined to die. So that changed the whole premise of the artwork we were looking at. Another year I had a student say, oh, I took a folklore class, and there's a whole documentary on this artist. This artist's name is Twin 77. He was the seventh set of twins that his mother had. And I know, and the village that he comes from in Nigeria has the highest rate of twinning in the world, and they have a very high infant mortality rate. So you could use that work of art to teach maternal morbidity and mortality. You could use it to teach about health disparities. You could use it to teach about just a variety of things. It's hard to talk about without seeing the work of art, but I use it oftentimes because it is so open to interpretation. And it's not always, you know, sometimes the works of art that the facilitator picks out will be slightly abstract. And you would think that with an abstract work of art, that there's more conversation about it. But sometimes the more literal the painting, the deeper the conversations are, because people will really look at nuances like body language and facial expressions and posturing. And that's a really good skill for nursing students to have, or nurses to have, when they go in and read a family in a room. You know, they might say, I mean, I always use this example with my students when I taught OB. They would chart, oh, the patient's not bonding with the baby. And I would say, tell me what that looks like. And art can use those same principles to give visual evidence for what you're seeing. So that's one way I've used it. The other way we've used it is I've had some people use it to teach culture. So you can, we just did a work of art that was a Hispanic family, and there were some cultural alternative methods and some religious icons in the picture. And so we use that to kind of discuss culture. So there are different ways you can use it. Sometimes it's just a matter of, I've done it with medical students and nursing students and social workers together, and you can use it to teach interprofessional education, active listening, teamwork. There's a lot of ways you can use visual thinking strategies.
Well, I'm thinking your comment earlier about thinking aloud, because that, I believe, came out of the critical thinking literature. So I would say, well, you know, what you're describing is a springboard that you could use to talk about the thought process and data collected and alternate hypotheses for critical thinking and clinical judgment. Could you comment about that?
Yeah, it's funny because I had looked that up recently. And the National League for Nursing has their definition of critical thinking. There's all different kinds of organizations. But the one that I think resonates with visual thinking strategies is from the American Association of Colleges of Nurses. Their definition of critical thinking is, critical thinking underlies independent and interdependent decision making. Critical thinking includes questioning, analysis, synthesis, interpretation, inference, inductive and deductive reasoning, intuition, application, and creativity. And that aligns perfectly with visual thinking strategies, because at no time during the conversation does the facilitator say, well, you're right and this person is wrong. Everyone's answer gets equal attention. And I think that that really helps participants to be much more likely to go out on a limb and think about what they're saying or seeing, and be a little more free with their interpretation. But it also causes them to use inductive and deductive reasoning. They have to give visual evidence for what they're seeing. And then that idea of intuition, you might have a feeling about something, but you don't know how to articulate it. This is a really good way to practice articulating your intuition or those subtle nuances. One of the things that we had talked about was maybe using this to teach respiratory distress. So what does it look like before someone's in respiratory distress? And what are those subtle nuances that a nurse might pick up on before someone gets critically ill? This process is really important for students to notice subtle changes and patterns. So it has a lot of applications, and I think it does align well with clinical reasoning and critical thinking.
How could I use it in the classroom? And then I guess I'd like to also know your reflections. Now that so many are teaching online, is it possible to use it online?
That's something that just started happening this year. Excuse me. When I was looking back over this last year and I was thinking, oh my gosh, what did I do with this whole year? And I realized I had done 12 guest lectures over the last year, all of them using visual thinking strategies, because our undergraduate faculty was really struggling with how to teach online and how to do activities that were interactive and interesting and gave some kind of process. So we inserted it into several different courses, our capstone course, a patho-pharm course. I did it in a physical assessment course and a healthy populations course. And it really lends itself well. And then lately I've been using it to help teach diversity, inclusion, and equity. And I didn't really plan on that, but I've noticed that students are much more receptive to talking about these topics that can be really difficult if they're talking about it in a third-party way. In other words, if you're looking at a work of art and talking about, gender identity, it's much easier to do that than talking directly with a patient, to kind of talk through what's the language that we use, how do we communicate things. So there's an artist that I have recently started using visual thinking strategies with, and it's well worth it for your listeners to Google Titus Kaphar. It's K-A-P-H-A-R. He's an African-American artist, and he'll do a lot of paintings with mothers and babies. And it'll be an African-American mother holding a child, but he cuts out the child in the painting out of the canvas. And his implications are that there's so many health inequities that take mothers and babies away from each other, that remove children from their mothers' lives, whether that's police violence, whether that's infant mortality, whether it's health disparities or the criminal justice system. So it really lends itself well. His work is really powerful. Thornton Dial is another one. He's an artist who has done a lot with racism, homelessness, and bigotry. And he has a lot of work that really is compelling, that really stimulates some interesting conversations. So to do it online, you can just show a work of art, and then you can have somebody else who will kind of call on students, and we just have one student at a time participate, and the facilitator will ask, what's going on in this painting? They talk to one person at a time. What are you seeing that makes you say that? Then they reiterate or kind of make sure that they're actually hearing and understanding what the participant says, so they're validating that participant's understanding, and then they call on somebody else. And it's a really good way to engage with students online. I think it's fascinating. I know other people who use it as an icebreaker at the beginning of a class. So that's another thing to do. So we've used it in a variety of ways in a lot of different classes.
I just had one final question. Some of us have read about using the arts and humanities for teaching. Would you say visual thinking strategies is an example of that? Like, have you done other kind of classic readings and classical literature, that sort of thing? Or do you think from your experience, really the artwork works best for nursing students?
I think there's a variety of ways to use arts and humanities. I have mostly used visual thinking strategies, although I had, when I taught obstetrics, I would have students pick a work of art that conveyed what family meant to them, and they could, that a lot of them bring in photography, and I had one student who just insisted that he wanted to present a song. And it was a song that his wife had written when she had a miscarriage. And it was really powerful. So, of course, I wasn't going to say no to that when he wanted to present that to the class. But there's a wide variety of ways. There's a lot of students who will, when we did that, who would bring in poetry. So I don't think there's one way. You can also use artwork to decrease stress in a classroom. And there's an example of that with a it was a research class. Half the students did an art therapy session, half the students didn't. And then they analyzed their stress levels before and after. And then they actually processed that data. And the students who did the art therapy beforehand had much lower stress levels. There's ways to teach group dynamics using mandalas. So there's a variety of ways to use art to teach different concepts. I use visual thinking strategies, and I don't always have a clear idea for which way the conversation's going to go. It's very similar to simulation. You just kind of let it happen. And at the end, we debrief about, after this conversation, tell me how you might use visual thinking strategies in your nursing. And I'm always interested to hear how they might use it. A lot of times students will talk about, well, it would help me to give report to the next nurse coming on because I'm going to give visual evidence for what I'm seeing. I'm going to step back and look at the whole picture, and then I'm going to break it down into smaller pieces. So it's always interesting to hear how the students think they might use it. And then I oftentimes will have students write a reflection about that because they really go into some detail about what it means to them. I've had students tell me that they listen more when they talk to their parents or their friends. They're not always thinking about what their next response is. They actively listen because they hear the facilitator do that, and they know how meaningful it is to have someone really listen like that. So I don't always have a clear objective for how I'm going to use it, but it's very revealing to hear how students perceive that they could use it.
Thank you so much for sharing this, your expertise in visual thinking strategies. And I know our listeners will be really appreciative and do appreciate your examples of how we can build it in our own courses. This concludes the podcast today. And Meg, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Marilyn. Mm-hmm.